Faster than a speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings in a single bound.
Look, up in the sky. It's a bird. It's a plane.
It's Superman
Podcast.
Superman was created by Jerome Siegel and Joe Shuster.
Hi, I'm Stephen Biscotti.
And I'm Justin Candelaria.
And you're listening to
the Saturday Morning Superman Show.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Saturday Morning Superman Show, your podcast about Superman in animation across generations. This season two, we're looking at Max Fleischer's Superman from 1941 to 1942. 17 theatrical shorts, and we're already on one of my favorite episodes of all time, Billion Dollar Limited.
Billion Dollar Limited came out in January 9th, 1942. Animation by Myron Wallman, Frank Andreas. Story by Seymour Nintel, Isidore Sparber. Musical arrangement by Sammy Timberg and director Dave Fleischer.
Yeah, Billion Dollar Limited is one of my favorite episodes, and it goes back to what we were talking about an episode or two ago where Max Fleischer's Superman was my introduction to Superman in animation. And growing up as a kid, I had the VHS tape of Superman. And this wasn't like a DC release or anything. Like, we have to remember that the Fleischer Superman cartoons were put out by Paramount. And and so it wasn't like a Warner Brothers thing or anything. But I had the tape. I had the tape of Max Fleischer's Superman. That was the first cartoon version of Superman that I was introduced to, aside from like the 1979 movie and growing up with Dean Cain in the New Adventures of Lois and Clark, the New Adventures of Superman TV show. And on this VHS tape, Billion Dollar Limited was one of the episodes. And this was the episode that I watched the most. I found so much joy within it. Because I loved the presentation of this world. I liked that, again, like, you know, you see Superman as this superhero strongman where, you know, he's invulnerable, you know, he's super strong, you know, he's doing everything that, like, most children grow up knowing about Superman. But you also had Lois Lane with, like, a Tommy gun. And, like, at a young age, seeing, like, Lois Lane with a Tommy gun, it was so funny to see. And it's really kind of comedic, but it really kind of lays the groundwork for who Lois Lane is. And it's just such a fun episode. Did you have any before we get into this, because we are going to be talking about it, you know, what were your initial thoughts when you first watched this episode?
Honestly, it's kind of like the first two episodes for me, because the first two episodes for me, you know, they're very fun episodes.
They're very fast, too. That's the thing.
Very fast, very quick, very fun episodes that, you know, just scream 1940s cartoons, 1930s cartoons, but more dialogue than usual, because, like, for me, I was shocked when I heard dialogue, because, you know, a lot of the time cartoons back then, they didn't really have dialogue. You know, like from cartoons from like Mickey Mouse, Tom and Jerry. But this is a more serious cartoon. Yeah. So I feel like it would have been kind of awkward to not have the dialogue that the show does have now. And it works. You know, it works. It has the I love the 1940s. You know, I'm a kind of like, it's kind of scary to say World War II enthusiast. But, you know, I grew up on Saving Private Ryan. I grew up on Band of Brothers, The Pacific, you know, a lot of World War II. Style movie, style shows that, you know, watching Superman in the 40s, it's kind of fun. You know, it's kind of fun to watch. I like, it's very noirish too. And this episode, you know, it's kind of, you know, just as simple as the others, but while just as simple, also just as interesting, especially with the whole train heist that we're going to be getting to in the episode. It's very interesting and very fun for me.
Yeah, it is a fun episode, and you know, at the moment, our sponsor, Royal Collectibles, your friendly neighborhood comic shop, located in Forest Hills, Queens, New York, Had to get that in there. They have a pretty good selection of Golden Age Superman books, from like, you know, just good filler issues to good key books. And Mike, the owner of Royal Collectibles, he's always endeavoring to go out and find like really cool Golden Age stuff, because, you know, you get a lot of Silver Age and you definitely get a lot of like Bronze Age books now, like in most comic shops, but Golden Age books are drying up, and that's just a reality of, you know, 2019 and 2020, I should say, where just these books you're not finding anymore. Like, you know, just people have them in their collections. Other people, you know, like they've already sold them and bought them and
thrown out.
Yeah. And so a lot of lost to time, a lot of are now proudly, you know, in collections, and they're really hard to find. And that's, you know, one of the many reasons why they're so valuable and they're top dollar prices. But he does have a good selection of Golden Age Superman books. And one of the things that I always find really interesting, outside of being a Superman fan, just being a comic book fan, is that, you know, the 1940s, very World War II era Superman books are a lot of fun, because it speaks to really, again, you know, it's a concept that we brought up during season one of Superman, the Saturday morning Superman show, that, you know, Superman is generational, and who he speaks to and how he speaks to people is all dependent on, you know, what's going on socially, politically, you know, where we're all at. So, you know, during World War II, he was a very pro-American, you know, buy war bonds, you know, stop the Nazis kind of hero. And then, you know, during the 60s and 70s, he was very much an icon for a lot of the social movements and reminding people about inclusivity and representation. And that's something that, you know, oddly enough, we're kind of like returning to a little bit within the Superman comic books now. But he's always being defined by the generation that he's part of. And I think Fleischer's Superman series being such a product of 1941, 1942 America, I mean, you can't help but see that, you know, you can't help but see the world, you know, through Superman's eyes and really through Fleischer and the whole animation team's eyes, you know, and how they choose to tell these stories. And also, I just kind of want to point out again, you know, we've been going through the Fleischer cartoon primarily on a DC Comics Warner Brothers release called Max Fleischer's Superman 1941-1942, authorized edition from the original masters, 17 theatrical shorts on two discs. It's a yellow DVD box set. It has Superman carrying Lois Lane. It's interestingly enough, it's the image on the box is the same as the statue that we have here. I don't know if you noticed that.
I didn't.
But yeah, I just kind of like took notice of it now. And like, they actually, like Cryptozoic, who did the statue, they did a really good, really remarkable job at bringing that to life, I gotta say. But yeah, it says the original and the best remastered from Superior Original Vault Elements. And one of the special features, I believe it was on disc one, or it might have been disc two, is The Man, the Myth, Superman, exploring the tradition of superhuman heroes on the page and screen. And then there's First Flight, the Fleischer Superman series, the origins and influence of this groundbreaking cartoon series. And we watched them, and within the making of, some of the people that they were speaking to spoke about, you know, the Fleischer brothers, you know, growing up, you know, not having a college education, which, you know, at the time, you know, it signified a certain kind of class. And these were men that believed in telling, you know, stories about the city, stories about people. And, you know, they weren't, you know, I hate to use the word highbrow. It's a term that they bring up in the making of. But, you know, these were people that were very interested in telling very human, very fun, very pulp, you know, noir kind of stories, where it's just about, you know, adventures and heroics. And I think, in the way that they approach Superman, that really stands the test of time, that, you know, it's relatable to everyone, you know, whether, you know, you're somebody that, you know, has a GED, high school education, college education, you know, whether, you know, no matter who you are and where you find yourself, you know, Superman speaks to all. And I think it's so great that they wanted to tell a story about a city and really tell it from like the perspective of its people, you know, rather than try and do something else with it, because I think Superman deserves to be treated that way. But enough about that. Billion Dollar Limited, let's get into. So again, if anybody, you know, wants to watch it along with us, I highly recommend queuing it up in just a second. If you've watched this episode before our episode, we hope you have fun listening to our commentary. And if you want to watch the episode after listening to our show, you could find Max Fleischer's Superman available on DVD. There's quite a few selections of it on DVD. And one of the sources that we've been using is the DC Universe app, which is in no way affiliated with us. You know, they're not sponsoring us, but it's just the way that we queue up the episodes to talk about while we record. So without further ado, my favorite episode of Max Fleischer's Superman, Billion Dollar Limited. Yeah, I love that it opens with the Paramount Picture logo. It's so interesting to see, because we're so used to Superman opening with Warner Brothers.
It makes me wonder, like, what would have happened if we still had Superman today with Paramount? Like, would we be having that Man of Steel 2?
Oh, Steven? Wow. I you know what? I love Paramount Studios. I love what they've done with Star Trek. I love what they've done with Mission Impossible. I like what they're doing with Terminator. Paramount has a good relationship with Skydance. Skydance, of course, works a lot with J.J. Abrams, and to think Skydance, you know, the first Marvel Studios movies like Iron Man and Incredible Hulk before Disney bought them out was done Marvel Studios through, you know, Paramount. Paramount was the one distributing them. Man, a Paramount Superman movie could have been really, really cool. I would have loved to have seen that. But, you know, it's cool because, you know, you have the cartoon and opens with, like, more powerful than locomotive, able to leap tall buildings in a single bound. You get the classic elements of Superman. Again, you have to remember that Superman can fly at this point. He could just jump really far. And a lot of the abilities that he has later on, you know, in the Superman series, he doesn't have now. So it's really just that he's invulnerable. He could leap tall buildings in a single bound. He's, you know, faster than a locomotive, and he's faster than a speeding bullet, and he's more powerful than a locomotive. Oh my gosh. I want to pause at this right now, because we open to a shot of the Daily Planet, and it says, $1 billion in gold, en route to Mint, largest single shipment of gold ever attempted by Lois Lane. And I like that you see the newspaper. I like that you see, like, a security guard, you know, standing by waiting for the train to come in. And again, yeah, you can really see, like, this is working men right now. You know, this isn't, you know, corporate stuff or anything. It's just, like, working men loading gold onto, you know, onto a train. And, of course, you have Clark Kent helping Lois onto the train. And it's just, it's cool to see people like this.
Honestly, it's funny how, Steven, the things you notice the most is working men and other things like that. Well, for me, I'm noticing the shadows, the lighting, you know, because like the film parts for me, they're just coming out because, again, whenever, like, you know, in the
I want to pause this episode. So if anybody's watching, we're going to pause it. As you can tell, we both really love this episode. And I feel like this is going to be like a throwback to like when we did The Way of All Flesh in season one. So I'm going to pause it right now on the crooks as they're pulling hoods that are kind of reminiscent of bat cowls, just without the ears over their heads. And I want to hear what you have to say. I think a lot of people would like to hear your technical acknowledgments of the show.
Well, first, for the lighting, as I was saying before, the lighting of the show is very noirish. You got the, I believe it's called shell shading of the characters. I don't know if that is shell shading or just the shading.
There is, you know, I think you could probably speak a little better to like animation techniques than I can, but I know there's like rotoscope. I know there's like dark deco, the cell shading. I know rotoscope was the technique for this, and then I remember dark deco was what they used for Batman the animated series.
From the shading, the shading of the that they use. I don't know if it is shell shading, but they did use the rotoscope, like Steven said. And the Batman animated series is very inspired by their the look of the Fleischer series of Superman.
Oh, completely.
Especially
yeah.
when it comes to the shadows, because you could tell, because the Batman animated series, it has that noir feel look, just like this show does.
Whereas Superman the animated series was far from it.
Yeah, no, it's much brighter.
And I gotta say, I think Superman the animated series in look is not even really like the Fleischer one. I know the Fleischer one was what inspired Superman the animated series, but I feel like Batman the animated series is closer to Fleischer's Superman much more than Superman the animated series.
Yeah, the Superman the animated series has a more, I don't want to say cartoony.
No, I think that's a good way to put it. I think cartoony, you know, we spoke about in you know, so far in this season, in the last episode, that Superman the animated series had a very simplistic look where, you know, you could really look to example to any of like the Superman animated stuff that I have in my collection, but, you know, everything is very blocky and very, you know, there's a lot of shapes being used. And there's a lot of simplicity in the design of the characters. There's nothing really complex about the look.
I feel like that may also have to do with the time of like when they were making the show. Like not like the time, like the 90s, but like the time when they had to create the show.
Yeah, I know it was definitely an effort. You know, I actually proudly own the Superman the animated series maquette from 1996. It's actually a very hard piece to find now. But I'm very proud to have it. It's one of my favorite Superman animated series collectibles. I honestly happened to get it on eBay quite a few years ago, and it was just one of those, like, the price that I got it at then, I'm glad, because I know it has gone up. But if you look at, like, the shape of Superman, for example, on that, I remember Bruce Timm did say that he inspired it. He was inspired to draw Superman after seeing the Hercules cartoon from long ago. And if you look at Hercules and then you look at Superman, you could see that, like, head-wise and everything, and really even right down to the design of, like, the musculature of the body, it's very similar, where it's very, like, puffy, but, like, there's not a lot of, like, you know, like, detail to him. And also they said that they just felt like if they keep the coloring very flat, it would just be so much easier to animate, given how much Superman does, that he's flying, he's, you know, fighting, he's doing so much, that to have to, like, add wrinkles or textures to the costume or the cape, it would just end up taking too much time. So, like, if they go with a very simple look, you know, it'd be much easier for the animators to do each episode and not as time consuming. And then you look at, like, the Superman maquette to the Fleischer one, and you could see that tonally, you could see how the evolution of animation goes from, like, the look of Fleischer to the look of Bruce Timm's Superman, and how Bruce Timm owes a lot of it. Bruce Timm's a self-taught artist, and one of the artists that did inspire him, you know, was, like, Fleischer and Jack Kirby, you know, people that did, like, a take on characters very much like that. Far from, like, the stuff of, like, Jim Lee and, like, Greg Capullo and like, McFarlane, like, where it's, like, very, you know, realistic and very detailed, where these harken back to more of, like, the traditional comic on cartoon making.
Yeah, and for when it comes to design in terms of animation, it's kind of sometimes it's like a hit or miss for me, because, like, for example, the Superman anime series, that works a lot for me because it kind of applies to both audiences, while the Fleischer one, it feels more adult. It feels a little bit more adult animation.
Yeah, completely. Yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah.
Same thing for the Batman anime series. I feel like that one's a little bit more adult, even though while kids did watch it back then. I feel like it was a little bit more.
I think age appropriate. Completely. Yeah, absolutely. I really couldn't agree more.
Yeah, and in this episode, we see, for example, like the type of animation and like artwork they do for characters, as Steven was saying, with the men who have a like a cowl type of mask when they were about to rob the train, which for me this like the design got me, where like I was like, oh, like I remember I wrote down my notes, I was like, wow, you know, guys with 5 o'clock shadows held threatening against the train heist. And well,
yeah, they're like your standard kind of like ruffians, where like they're you know, you have you're just like square chin, like goons. They're just goons. That's the thing. They're just like your stereotypical 1940s goon
who just had a shave right before this heist. They're probably like, guys, we gotta all have a nice clean shave right before we do this gold heist.
Yeah,
but yeah, like it's kind of funny.
Very menacing, thick eyebrows and stuff.
Thick eyebrows with the mask that makes them look like the Phantom from that one movie back in the 90s. I don't remember the Phantom that much, but yeah, the designs are just the thugs alone, you know, with the shading of the shadows gives it a more noir look. And in the scene we're about to see here, a car that could do more than meets the eye, in my opinion, because I remember when watching the episode, I was about to turn to Steven and just be like, it's a Transformer.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of Kenner released a toy line for the Shadow based on the Alec Baldwin movie. And there were a couple vehicles in the toy line, but they had like Lamont Cranston's car. And it shaped very much like this, and it had like features on it, and it kind of reminds me a little bit of that. So you have like a pulp character like the Shadow who we're referencing in a show that's very pulp in nature.
And while this transforming car, you
but
know,
look at how great. I'm sorry to interrupt, Justin, but look how great this is. I mean, the car is speeding alongside the train, and like this is so fun to watch. It's a train heist.
Yeah, it reminds
it's so fun.
Of what you said about when we were doing season one for the animated series of Superman, how Metropolis it has this like futuristic style to it. I feel like this car gives it that futuristic like 1940s style to.
Oh, absolutely!
To the show
as well. Completely, completely. I mean, let alone the fact that this is taking place in the 40s, you know, whereas, like, Superman the Animated Series was supposed to be set in this, like, yesteryear of, like, where it's, like, the city of tomorrow, but it's kind of like, you know, you're not... Well, actually, no, I'm mistaken about that. Batman the Animated Series was kind of set in, like, this yesteryear where... Like, people are driving, like, 1940s cars, but then people have cell phones and stuff.
That's actually
whereas,
very...
like, Superman, the animated series, it was very futuristic where, okay, like, people are, you know, they don't really... It's like, you know, like, you have, like, these highways above highways and you know, it's the city of tomorrow where it looks almost like something very, like, you had mentioned early on in season one that it was very, like, much like Dubai where... You know, like it's like the city coming out of nowhere, and you're really right on the money with that. So
yeah, and you just remind me of what you said about the Batman animated series, because it's funny because actually it's kind of a little off note, but Gotham also took that same style but did it live action where people are driving 1940 not really 1940s but almost like 1970s cars, but they have cell phones and typewriters mixed with regular computers that. You would see back in early 2000s, which it's kind of weird when shows do that. I mean, it puts the setting off like offset for me because it's kind of a weird like what kind of timeline are they trying to go for? And it's almost the same thing where it's kind of like with Superman actually. But if you think about it, like if you've seen the films from Marvel such as Captain America: The First Avenger, or if you watch like their shows like Agent Carter, you know, like in their whole you know, Hail Hydra series and stuff like that. It's kind of like, think of it like that, you know, more fictionalized, a little bit slightly more advanced 1940s for the Fleischer series where thugs have transforming cars and like scientists, like invented robots that could fly. And
yeah,
stuff
it's all
like kind
of like coming out of like the World's Fair, you know, and like stuff like that.
Yeah, because that was
like
back then,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
They probably got it from that.
Yeah, it's very cool stuff. But yeah, I love the animation in this episode so much. I love Lois is investigating. She's trying to stop the train. The goons are shooting at Lois Lane. She picks up the discarded Tommy gun. She picks up the gun, and then she starts firing back at the thugs.
Yeah,
and then
I was
they
shocked
go,
by this.
they have to diverge because like the train's going into the tunnel. And stuff, and it's just, I mean, it's so fun, like, Lois Lane holding a machine gun.
She does
like,
it so nonchalantly, too. She's just like, I'm just gonna pick up this gun and shoot at
him. And she's shooting at him, and it's great. And Superman, like, you know, we're 4 minutes into an 8-minute episode, and Superman hasn't been in this episode once. Now you have Lois Lane, you know, trying to...
make the train go faster, like, or try to, like, speed past these guys.
Yeah, and she's trying to, you know, like, get away... and you get like the $1 billion limited running wild, and that's at the Daily Planet. And then Clark Kent is, this looks like a job for Superman. And then he runs out.
This is the best one where he changes. It's just like out in the alleyway when you're all the garbage.
You see like the shadow of him changing on the Daily Planet truck. He jumps over a bunch of crates and then he walks off. And it's like so cool. He like saw, like he struts away and then he just jumps. And it's like, it's like, I can't recommend.
He's like looking at which no one saw him changing.
That's it's so cool. You know, it's just, it's like silly stuff like that is what I love about Superman. And I feel like even if you're like this, like, oh man, like I hate Superman, you can't watch something like that and not watch it with joy where you're like, just like, that's just so fun. You know, it makes you feel like a kid, you know, it really does.
Yeah.
You know, just watching him change and he jumps. It's great.
Even though the entire time I'm honestly waiting whenever he like, he's changing, like, especially in the phone booth, I'm just like waiting for, instead is not him, but Deadpool to come out, like in that teaser for Deadpool 2.
Yeah. That was a good one.
Zip it, Stanley.
Yeah.
And so we have Superman walking along the top of the train, you know, trying to figure out how to save Lois while also stop these thugs. And the thugs, they blow up the bridge in which it just collapses down onto, I don't know where the floor is, but this episode is starting to end up like the, what was the episode from the anime series?
It was The Way of All Flesh with the train.
Not that one, but it's the Tools of the Trade.
Oh, the Tools of the Trade. Yeah, absolutely.
I remember you saying that they got a inspiration from a Fleischer episode.
Yeah, you're right. Oh my gosh. Yeah, good callback to that.
I believe.
Yeah.
And so I was like, wow. Okay, I now see the Fleischer episode. And so I think me and Steven are laughing at another.
They're lobbing bombs at the train now.
I don't even think those are just, those are like pure missiles.
Into Superman realizing that he can't. Superman realizes that he can't stop the train, so he grabs Lois Lane and he jumps off the train, and the train car blows up, but then the train starts going backwards, so he grabs onto the train on the tracks, and he's pulling with all of his might to pull the train.
To be honest,
I can't.
It would have made more sense.
He pulls up the
train. And then now they're lobbing tear gas at him.
So he's pulling up the train uphill. They're lobbing tear gas at him. This one goon throws a whole box at him.
I bet the other goons are like, you idiot.
He coughs. He lets go of the train and he's holding onto it with one arm. And now he's trying to like resituate himself and pull it back up the hill.
It would just makes more sense for him just to take the train off the tracks and put it on the side.
And now they're shooting at him. And, like, that's a really iconic shot of, like, the bullets hitting the S. And he starts pulling it, and then he gets his strength, and he, like, just does it. And this kind of reminds me of, like, John Henry Irons, you know, like just, like, the man that beat the train, you know, and stuff. Like, just, like, he, like, just pulls it, and it's, like, 1940s, like, you know, champion of the press, strongman kind of stuff. Like, straight out of, like, you know, Siegel and Schuster's, you know, action stuff. He saves the train, you know, he brings the $1 billion limited into where it belongs and he stops the goons and Superman saves $1 billion gold shipment after bringing masked gangsters to justice. Superman disappears, public mystified.
Was there any other passengers on that train except for the gold and Lois?
I think it was the gold, Lois, and maybe the conductor.
That's just a weird passenger list for a train, to be honest. I mean, I know it's full of gold, but honestly, I thought I would expect to see more passengers.
Yeah, they don't, like,
I think
you don't
he could have
really,
let
like,
the gold go. I think he could have let that go.
But it's a lot of fun because in the way that the Bruce Timm Superman animated series was, where they would always make an effort to show Superman struggling, I think this episode's perfect because you see him, you know that he's strong, but it's kind of like, you know, like that idea, like, it goes back to even like Superman Returns where, you know, Superman flies in, he catches the wing of the plane, but then the plane wing breaks off and then he flies back and then he has to like fly faster to then like catch the plane. And it's stuff like that that I love about Superman, so much, especially like in this where he's struggling to carry the train, you know, up the hill because it's, you know, I mean, it's heavy and like, even like it's a little too heavy for Superman. He could do it, but he's going to struggle. And then, like, they lob the tear gas at him, and then, like, he's coughing, so of course he, like, he's disoriented, and he drops. He lets go of the train, and then the train's dragging him, and then he's got to, like, re-pull it and stuff. And it's kind of like, you know, it does remind me of, like, that powerlifter strongman kind of stuff where, like, you know, like, you have these, like, big strong people, but, you know, like, even they have to, like, kind of, like, grunt and stuff before, like, they, like, do, like, a lift or whatever. And I like seeing Superman presented in this way. Another aspect that I'd like to point out is every single episode ends where it's like Superman disappears, public mystified. Mm-hmm. And I love that idea that, like, in the world of Superman right now, nobody knows who he is. Like, nobody knows anything about him. Nobody knows that he's an alien. They just know that he's, like, just this guy that's helping out, and that's really it. And I love kind of, like, thinking about the idea of, like, the public being mystified by this. And I can only imagine, like, in world, like, people speculating, like, who is he? Like, you know, and the Tom DeHaven book, It's Superman, actually delves into this a whole lot more, into the world of Metropolis. It's actually not said Metropolis, it's said New York City. Yeah. And it delves into Depression era New York City and how the public's responding to Superman. And it's a brilliant book that I think was published in 2004, 2005. It's one of my favorite books of all time. Highly recommend it. So if you like Fleisch's Superman, I definitely recommend checking it out.
And of course, the for every finale of the Fleisch's series episodes, right after we get the newspaper spin, we get that one line we have left of Superman himself. And this is, I think this is the most funniest one line he's got, especially when he kind of folds the newspaper over his face. He's just like, I think I know who he is.
Yeah. You liked the episode?
Yeah, it was fun. It was fun, especially a good laugh when we see all the, like, Superman just pulling a train while thugs lob tear gas at him, and one just is like, screw this, I'm just gonna throw the whole thing.
It's so much fun. Like, it kind of makes me, like, I want to go out and buy, like, a toy train and then, like, get one of my Superman figures, like, really, like, one of the ones with, like, really good articulation and pose them like that. Like, I'm sure I could set something up, like, where maybe, like, if I have string, I could hang him from the ceiling and it looks like he's carrying something. I got to think about it. But where can we find you, Justin?
You could find me at Justin Candelaria on Instagram, while also on Prime Critic Entertainment on Instagram and Twitter.
And you could find me at Sherbert Danny Jr. on Instagram. You could find me at Reggie Mantle III on Twitter. That's Reggie Mantle uppercase III. And you could find the Saturday Morning Superman Show on Instagram and Twitter. And if you like the episode and you want to hear more, just be sure to send us a review, give us a like, subscribe, do all that good stuff, and be peaceful. And we'll see you again next week.
The Saturday Morning Superman Show is brought to you in part by Royal Collectibles, your friendly neighborhood comic book shop located in Forest Hills, Queens, New York, offering some of the best in pop culture needs and collectibles.